And good morning, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. It's Maryland Morning. Glad you're with us. Jerry Sandusky is my guest this morning. He's the sports director at WBAL Television and the play-by-play announcer for the Baltimore Ravens on the Ravens Radio Network. Earlier this year, he published a poignant and moving memoir of growing up as one of five children of John Sandusky, who played for the Cleveland Browns and the Green Bay Packers, and who went on to a long coaching career with the Baltimore Colts, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Miami Dolphins. Jerry's memoir is a touching tribute to his dad and a compelling chronicle of how a family coped with the pressures and perks of professional football. Jerry, it's good to have you here.
Great to visit with you today.
So give us a thumbnail sketch of your dad.
So John, my dad was this larger-than-life figure. He was the Rock of Gibraltar, a huge man, 6'1", 300, played in the NFL back before they did weightlifting, you know, just grew that big. And he always had this huge presence about him. He wasn't just, you know, a man or a father. He was a force of nature. You know, we called him Big John behind his back until we were all adults. And he just had this immense presence and just ability to give you a look, and that was the essence of the conversation. And part of what I explore in this book is how men of that era raised the next generation of men, teaching us how to be men without using many words.
You were in a family of five kids. Was the family a team? Was your dad the coach of the Sandusky team?
You know, he was probably the he was the law of the team. But my mom was the axis of the team. One of the things you learn in coaches' families is the mom is the glue that holds it all together, because the dad's working so much, and you grow up kind of in fear of your father and knowing that he's the law and that the law is invisible at times, but it's there. It's kind of the invisible fence. But really, your mom was, if there was a coach, it was your mom, because she knew what your father needed to hear and what he didn't need to hear. She was the arbiter of all things, and she was really the voice of wisdom and everything.
Yeah, the gatekeeper, as
absolutely.
It were.
Yeah. And that's not unique to my family. You know, you talk to coaches' families, there's only two types of coaches' wives in this world, and those are great ones and ex ones. And my mom was a great one.
Your mom passed away actually before your dad.
That very young.
Incredible shock to the family.
58 years old.
And how do you think your dad coped with that loss? Because at that point, he was still working.
I think the word lost was the right word. It was, it's part of what I chronicle in the book, is that you are prepared for many things, I think, in life, naturally. You are prepared to see your parents die. You are prepared to bring children into the world. You're prepared to get married. You're not prepared to see your father get remarried. At least I certainly wasn't. And so I was starting my broadcasting career at that point in his life as my mom died. My dad just said, just keep living with me. So can we bachelored it together? And I watched him go through that year transition where he was lost. He didn't know how to do laundry. He didn't know how to cook. I barely knew how to cook. I used to make this big pot of spaghetti every Sunday night, and we ran out of that.
That would be for the week.
That was it. You know, again, by Thursday, we're eating out on our own. And so I watched him struggle through this, and then I watched him remarry. And it was an enormously challenging transition to watch my father, a member of the greatest generation, be that lost. And I think because he was so lost, you know, I explore in the book how he chose his next wife, who was very different than my mother, and who I didn't necessarily feel all that good about. But, you know, that's as much about me as it was about him.
Yeah. Your family, no stranger to tragedy on all sorts of levels. Your brother Joe died of an injury apparently related to football.
Yeah, he died. He was 17. I was 17. He was 19. He was a sophomore at Tulsa, and he was a gifted athlete. He was the one of the five kids who was going to be a pro athlete. And he had a cyst on his shoulder caused just from rubbing against his shoulder pads. And the pneumococcus germ got in through there, and instead of going to his lungs, went to his heart and killed him overnight. You know, he called home one night. He thought he broke his ribs in the previous day's game. And then he died on a Tuesday, you know, after calling us. And so all of a sudden, you know, you're a senior in high school. My dad's in the prime of his career. My mom's a young woman at 51 at that point. And it literally one day your whole world blows up. And I watched, you know, this, I lived through this, and I've seen it in other people's lives. And all of a sudden the things that are so important are just a shell of what importance once was.
But your dad, of course, kept going to the games, kept going to practice. I mean, the season coached, didn't end.
Right, yeah. He coached the week my brother died, and we encouraged him to, because, you know, we were all lost. You know, and it was the first time I saw my dad cry. It was the first time I saw my father be lost. You know, that's a staggering thing for any young man to see his father lost and not know what the answers are. You know, it undermines your belief in religion, you know, what you think is right and wrong, what you think is north and south. It just blows everything up. And so it was, you know, watching my parents, how they had dealt with tragedy. My father worked more. My mother became more spiritual. And gradually there became a divide. And I say that with no criticism whatsoever, because it was a time when there was no family counseling. Nobody went to talk it out. And they didn't talk. You know, they each dealt with their own pain silently.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning, Jerry Sandusky. His book is called Forgotten Sundays, A Son's Story of Life, Loss, and Love from the Sidelines of the NFL. Your dad died of Alzheimer's disease. He was 80 years old, former player in the NFL, head injuries and, you know, traumatic brain injuries, very much in the news. You cover it all the time as a journalist and a reporter. What's your take on the relationship between these head injuries and the violent hits that these players are taking now and who took them in your dad's era? And these brain conditions.
I don't think there's any doubt at a common sense level that there's a link between, you know, the concussive nature of the sport and long-term physical problems. But I think we're being limited in our view that men suffering concussions automatically leads to Alzheimer's. If that were the case, every single person who played football would wind up with Alzheimer's. We know that's not the case. In writing this book, I kind of came to the realization in talking to so many other people that I believe Alzheimer's has a spiritual link to it as well. For my father, he coached high school after he got done coaching in the NFL, and then because of an accident, the doctors wouldn't let him coach anymore. And within 6 months, he had Alzheimer's, which got me down the trail of thinking and exploring that the spiritual component to Alzheimer's is that when a person loses his or her sense of identity, of sense of self, of purpose, of why I'm here, of who I am, once you're cut adrift, and you feel forgotten, it's almost inevitable that you too will soon forget. And so I fully support all of the research into concussion. I fully support all of the safety initiatives, and I think they need to continue that. But I think we have to be careful not to take away all physical interaction and all contact from sports, because this is not just a physical condition. It's a spiritual condition, and I think we're being nearsighted if we expect our doctors and our scientists alone to solve the problem.
Speaking of identity, in 2011, a fellow named Jerry Sandusky was indicted and found guilty of doing horrible things to children in Pennsylvania. He was an assistant coach at Penn State. What was that like for you to happen to have, just completely serendipitously, the same name of a child molester?
What are the odds?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's how the book starts, is you know, the day that I learn what's going on and this crazy twist of events of, wait a second, here's a guy who has this name that sounds identical to mine, works in football, and all of a sudden, everybody who hears my name connects me to this guy for understandable reasons. It's been a complete upside down, inside out experience that I just couldn't at first get my head wrapped around. But I had to in a hurry because it impacted my family at such a visceral level. You know, my kids were dealing with it at school. My wife couldn't go to the grocery store without coming home in tears. One night we're watching Saturday Night Live, and there's a Jerry Sandusky routine on it. And she just, you know, burst into tears and folds into my arms.
Because there were people who were confusing you two.
Oh, absolutely.
They thought you were that guy.
Absolutely.
You were getting hate tweets and stuff.
Hate mail, death threats. I mean, there was a point at which I was getting hundreds of hate tweets an hour on Twitter. And look, I understand. I understand the confusion. I get it. But I had to deal with it, and I had to develop a strategy for my family to deal with it. And I drew on something that I learned from my father after Super Bowl III. He was an assistant with the Baltimore Colts. They lose to the Jets, the biggest upset in NFL history. The next day at school, I get into a fight because somebody was bad-mouthing my father. And so he pulls me aside, and he said, look, because of this, you're going to find out there are a lot of jerks in the world, and you can't punch them all without becoming the biggest jerk. And I thought at the time my father was just trying to get me through third grade. I had no idea he had given me the wisdom to get my family through this issue that came up 4 decades later when I had to teach my kids that people are going to say bad things about me. Don't react to it. Because the lesson I taught them that I had learned from this whole episode was hating is always about the hater. It's not about you. I can't control what other people say, think, do. All I can control is how I respond.
There are some amazing moments in this book. One of my favorites is a scene where your mom is sewing jerseys for the Miami Dolphins to make them tighter so that tacklers can't grab the cloth and bring down the runners. Did stuff like that just sort of happen all the time? You literally lived your childhood on the sidelines of NFL football.
And everybody had a role in it. You know, like my mom was a gifted seamstress, and so when they outlawed the ability, they used to spray like WD-40 on jerseys so guys couldn't grab it. Well, once they outlawed that, somehow my mom and dad, through a conversation, figured out mom's a great seamstress. She would come to training camp, and she would tailor each of the players' jerseys. And that's how I knew which guys were making the team, because they weren't going to tailor the jerseys of guys who weren't going to make the team.
So you had scoops right, even at that
absolutely.
Age.
Absolutely. Before I was in the media, I knew how to figure out scoops. And so everybody in the family had a role. My brother and I, you know, we worked on the sidelines. You were in the locker room. And I always say, look for the kids now. If you go to a game on Sunday, look for the ball boys and the ball girls. They're right at the line of scrimmage. They're usually wearing a little vest. They're easy to identify. And nobody sees them. And that's why it's such an important role, because a ball boy is allowed to go anywhere in the stadium.
Yeah.
You have total access, and nobody sees you. You are the invisible fly on the wall. It's wonderful, and it was an amazing way to grow up.
Best source in the whole stadium, right?
Oh, it was fabulous.
Let's talk a little bit about the Ravens. Right after we lost this game last week against Cincinnati, Mr. Roethlisberger and Pittsburgh ended up scoring 51 points against, of all teams, the Colts. Two questions. Are they going to wear those horrible uniforms again, the Steelers?
No, thank God they're not wearing those bumblebees.
The bumblebee thing.
There's no, you think you hate them as a fan, as a play-by-play guy. They're a nightmare because I can't see the number. It's like watching a TV test pattern for 22 people running around. But by the end of those games, when they wear those numbers, every play-by-play guy has a migraine headache.
Are we going to beat them? I mean, and if we don't, what happens? We're both 5-3. How do you see the matchup?
Look, the matchup is the way every Ravens-Steeler matchup turns out. I could give you a prediction that's meaningless, because the only thing you know about these games is probably going to be a 3-point outcome. Who has the upper hand on it? I can't tell you, because they're unpredictable. But the stakes are so high, the motivation will be so high, I think you're going to see a tight game, because you leave this game with a win, you're 6-3. You have one more game before the bye week. You have a shot to go into the bye week at 7-3. You're in good shape. You lose this game, you're 5-4. You're on a two-game losing streak. You're liable to go into the bye week 5-5. And so the swing is staggering.
Huge,
so
yeah.
It keeps everybody on edge, which is one of the things that sets this game up so high. And Tom, I'm not blowing off your question about who will win, but I don't make predictions for this simple fact. A couple of years ago, my wife and I celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
And so, thank you. And so she had set up this really special getaway to a resort in Mexico, and it was going to be in January. And she says to me in December, hey, what are we going to do about this? The Ravens might make the playoffs. I said, honey, have you watched this team play this year? They're going to be one and done. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry.
They won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. Nice call.
Right. So I don't make predictions anymore.
Well, you do write really, really compelling and wonderful books.
Thank you very much. Writing's a great passion of mine.
Well, this is a really fun read, and I appreciate your coming in this morning.
Pleasure being with you.
Jerry Sandusky. He's the voice of the Baltimore Ravens, the sports director at WBAL in Baltimore, and the author of Forgotten Sundays, A Son's Story of Life, Loss and Love from the Sidelines of the NFL. The Ravens play the Steelers on Sunday Night Football. Now, I am contractually obligated to encourage you to tune into Echoes on Sunday night right here on WYPR. But if you're inclined to ignore me, and let's face it, many, many people are, or if you happen to just not be in the mood for new age music on Sunday night, here's my suggestion. Tune into NBC, tune the TV sound off, and listen to Jerry Sandusky, Stan White, and Kadri Ismail call the game. I'm just saying. Maryland Morning is an original production of Your Public Radio, WIPR, in Baltimore. The show is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers. We've got production help from Payam Agagasim and Elizabeth Sherwood. Our coffee is from Zeke's Coffee. Our theme music is from Clean Cuts, except for this theme music. Our website is wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Happy Halloween. Be extra careful driving when the kids are out trick-or-treating tonight. And have a great weekend.